for our Canadian lifters. Pure passion, real results, what you put in your body should matter. Pure Vita Labs PVL supplements are clean, tested, and approved. Powering athletes for over 25 years. They also power the KOTL podcast. You could trust PVL. Use code KOTL15 for partnership pricing at PVL.com.
Six-pack Lapidat. We got the 76-kilo world champion, Jessica Bittner, and Eric Helms. Eric, you've been on the podcast so often. Would you say in this episode, you're a guest or a co-host when it's Jessica?
I am just a privileged person in the presence of greatness. I'll say that.
You're like, you're not even going to say nothing. You're just here to witness it.
You're just here to hype her up, slap her on the back, not hard enough. And and get yelled at for telling her not to go up steps. That's all I'm here for.
Well, what's this background story? First off, you don't give hard enough back slaps, because back slaps are huge, man.
Jess prefers to have other world champions coach her so they can slap her on the back hard enough. This little puny bodybuilder is like, me. Every time she went out, and she was like, "You're submissive and breedable. I'm trying to squat over here," you know. And then, yeah, it's a good thing she still made her squats, because it certainly wasn't from my back slaps.
Was this an actual conversation, Jess?
Yeah, I guess it was really taken to heart. We had one conversation where Eric was like, "Do you have any criticism or any sort of feedback? Anything I can do better?" And I was like, "No, you did everything great. Except the one thing is the back slap could be harder."
Really?
I guess he internalized that a little bit.
It offended him. He's like, "Well, I mean, in my defense, I mean, I didn't have good footing," and it's like, "Eric, just lean into it. Do what you got to do. It's fine."
I hadn't taken creatine with me on the trip.
That's right. I just was a little dehydrated. Can I tell you, I was a little dehydrated. I'm usually a lot more powerful, but no, like a good back slap. I'm telling you, I feel the same way. I've had people where they're, it's because sometimes you feel a little shy about it. You're like, really? How much is too much? Nobody wants to be the guy that you give a back slap and the guy's like, "All right, take it easy. What are you trying to prove something?"
Jess turns around like, "Ow!"
It's better that Jess is like, "Give me a little more," than Jess is like, "Hey, pal, relax. You know, guys, we're not fist fighting out here. This isn't the ultimate fighting championships." But a good back slap, man, it's the spike of adrenaline that you get. And it is a placement. Isn't it high up the back towards the neck?
Mm-hmm. Depends on which lift. Jess has different preferences for where the slap occurs. There's a science to this. I'll let her tell them.
Okay.
Do I? I think it's just mostly at the top of the back of your neck. Two hands.
I think for your bench, you wanted it mid-back, didn't you?
Or am I don't know what I said.
She was trying to help you because they weren't powerful enough. She was like, maybe if
you had a larger surface area, you can hit them harder. That's right.
Eric's like, this is insulting at this point. He's like, "Don't help me. I'll sort it myself."
He's both hands, Eric.
Yeah. And Eric's like, "I did." He's like, She's like, "I'll ask Agata or somebody. It's fine. It's fine." You're like, "All right.
Hey, well, Agata, can you just punch me in the back of the head or something?"
Yeah, wow. She's a little tight. Be careful. But yeah, so how was it? How was your guys' impressions of it? Was it everything you thought it would be?
Honestly, going out there, it didn't fully hit until the actual competition itself, until the first lift, when the crowd was going insane, and you can see all these people, like a bigger crowd than I've ever seen in my entire life for powerlifting. Just absolutely going nuts. And it's at that moment where you just think to yourself, holy shit, this is the big leagues. If there ever was anything like that for powerlifting, this is it. It was insane.
That's what everybody says is like, I mean, I felt the same way. It didn't dawn on me. I kept telling myself, you want to be present for these moments. And I kept telling myself, like, this is the biggest powerlifting competition in history. The viewership is going to be the biggest, the gate, if you will. Like, I'm a boxing MMA fan. They talk about the gate. This is how much a ticket was and so many people. It'll be the biggest gate. It's the biggest cash prize. It's got all the stars. And I just wasn't like up for it. And I was like, what is wrong? What is wrong with me? Until the day of. when I came to the venue and it was packed. And then I started feeling like, oh my God, this is the wildest.
And yeah, it was pretty wild, man.
Jess, when you were walking up, Gavin was talking about, he could hear it when he's walking up for the first squat, and he could hear the crowd like chanting, and he wasn't there on the platform yet. And that's when he's like, well, that's new. Like, I can hear them as I'm going up the stairs, getting closer and closer. And then as he's walking up closer and closer to the platform, and he actually peeks out of the stage and sees it, he's like, holy smokes, this is all right. Well, here we are. Like, how did you feel when you seen it? Would you take him back nervous, or did you like give you energy?
Bit of both. It definitely, over the years, I've learned to use those kind of nerves as fuel and turn it into adrenaline. But it was so much adrenaline. Like, there's almost no other option in my mind. There's only a certain amount of nervous I think I can get and still make the lift. So I just use that to get myself hyped up. And man, was I ever hyped up. Like, for squats, honestly, you always have that feeling where you're, or at least I do, where I'm definitely a little shaky for the first one. But in my head that day, there was absolutely no room for that. And it hyped me up because I've just never seen a crowd that big for powerlifting. And it was actually for me, a very encouraging atmosphere. Just knowing everyone's just cheering for world records getting broken and that sort of thing. Actually, one thing I thought that was so cool was, I think it was during squats. My friend sent me a video. She was sitting near the front, and it's a little zoomed in video of this guy way at the back. You see this guy stand up way at the back against the wall. My friend zooms in on him. He's wearing an I Heart Jess Bittner shirt. And that's, I thought that was the coolest thing ever.
It was so amazing. They were so, Gavin described it as a warm crowd. Like, they were warmed up. Like, when you get there, sometimes you show up and you almost have to convince them, like, let's go rallying them. Russell Orhi did that in 2021, where he hit the platform because it was a COVID world. So it was a very much sized down world. And he threw his hands up and was like, let's go. This is ain't no chess match. And then the crowd started cheering and rallied behind him. Gavin described this crowd. You just show up, just let them see you, and they're going nuts. And people are wearing, I love Jess. And like, they were chanting people's names at points. If you're going for a world record and whatnot, the biggest thing is not getting too excited and trying to sustain that level for 3 hours straight. And that's where you being a veteran is going to help. Cause you, how many world championships? I mean, you were in like 2016, like you've been like, you're young, but you're a wily veteran. You're like almost the 2016 at Worlds. We're not talking like, oh, that was your first local meet. No, that was my first world championships. I was there for Hack Gibbs and Ray Williams. Like, it'll be difficult to rattle you, but even still, it means something that somebody like you, who's been around the block that many times, still was like, listen, this was different. This is a whole nother ball game.
Yeah, absolutely.
What was the vibe like in the warm-up room?
Actually, less cutthroat than IPF Worlds. It was actually pretty friendly, in my opinion. Whereas when you go to IPF Worlds, there's a lot more country-to-country competitiveness. And a lot of stuff like that, and it feels a lot more negative depending on who you're paired up with. Usually Canada's with New Zealand or something, and we're pals, and it's always a good time. But this was also very kind of friendly, you know. Like, I was on the warm-up platform with Bonica and Amanda, and mostly encouraging as well. It was all around a very, very welcoming atmosphere, which was super unique for such a competitive meet.
Because the money on that's actually a little surprising. Like the money on
that's
the
what
line.
I felt. Maybe I'm a little more chill than everyone else. I don't care. Like,
you're also,
just...
they better think twice, right? There's easier people to pick on and bully than you, probably, right? I mean, maybe like if like probably Evie Corrigan's like, actually, I got bullied. Okay. I got someone, right? I don't know about you, but someone was eating my chips in my recomp in the whole nine. What did you feel about it, Eric? How was it like in the warm-up room for you? Cause you've been to Worlds before at different competitions.
Yeah. Worlds is unique, you know? So the warm-up room is higher pressure than the whole like event at Worlds for the reasons mm-hmm. that Jess was talking about. You have a whole bunch of different countries. There's a lot more competitors. But depending on where Worlds is, and often is not like a highly populated area, think Tallinn, think Belarus, Calgary was probably an exception. Sometimes the only people in the audience, it looks like it's just very sparse stands, and it's mostly the people from the prior flight, their coaches, and somebody local. And even when it is packed, like Calgary was pretty kitted out, it was a small venue, you know? So Worlds is a strange, like high pressure environment that doesn't have the same kind of crowd pressure, but the warm-up room is pretty intense. And there's a lot of people who are very serious. Things are moving quickly, a lot of things to manage. And yeah, there's a certain level of like, kind of like countries, like it's like cliques almost all around. So this was different. We had a large warm-up area and a small number of lifters, and because there's only one coach per lifter, it lent itself to be, I think, as Jess described, and each platform had a couple of SBD folks attached to it who are doing all the loading. So some of the things that can create warm-up drama didn't occur, like, you know, the roamers who are like looking for someone who has the like the weight on the bar that they need. Hey, can I work in real quick here? And you've got like, you know, three athletes who are like trying to time their stuff, and you grudgingly say yes, or you actually just say no, and that creates drama. That didn't happen because we had, you know, assigned platforms, and they purposely tried to they didn't put any of the people in the same weight class on the same platforms. They tried to match strength as best they could without putting people who were quote unquote head to head, even though everybody was head to head. So you can understand why she would be with, you know, Bonica and Amanda. So yeah, it was strangely high pressure and low pressure at the same time. So like, I felt like a mother hen because I was like, I only had one athlete. I didn't have to load plates. And I was just kind of there hovering around Jess like, so, you know, you need some water, you know, like, but then the feeling completely changed once we finished and we went up. Because now we're dealing like the staging area that you typically have in a meet is like a room size, and you got all, you know, a bunch of people, like five people sitting in a bunch of chairs along a wall, and there's like a whole warm-up area you can kind of move through. And then when you're three out, you start to walk up. But no, all that was condensed into a hallway. So that was pretty wild. And, you know, to kind of go back to that sense of how big the crowd was, you would go up this little stairwell to get to like the stage right area where the, you know, the person you give your attempts to and the curtain to go into the coaching box and the platform was. And when Evie finished her squat, she came down from those stairs and we're all looking up at her, the whole rest of the coaching staff and the women's flight. And she was like, whoa, like that was crazy, you know? And of course, just intimidated everybody else. And earlier we had been hearing the chanting in the crowd, and we actually thought that the monitor had sound. And then I can't remember if it was Panna or one of the other coaches trying to figure out whether they could turn it up or turn it down. We realized, no, we're hearing this through a wall and upstairs. That's the crowd chanting. We're hearing them from a distance.
Yeah.
So you had a sense of kind of scale before you went out there. And like Jess was describing, yeah, I looked to my right when I got in the coaching box, and part of my brain went, don't look at that. You need to focus.
Yeah.
So I was, yeah, I was, I had kind of like a compartmentalized brain operating. I was like, there's a lot of things I'm trying to manage, and I this is a high stakes event, and I want to get this right, but I also want to stop and smell the roses a little bit. And I found that to be challenging, but there were moments I could, which was pretty cool, which I'm sure we'll get into.
And what was the game plan going in when you guys had, obviously, you had the record for squats, and then Carlene ended up, she took it in the Commonwealth, right?
Yeah.
She did.
So what were you guys thinking there? Because it was 223, I think, and she ended up taking 223 and her and a half on her second. When you guys were having a battle plan, was it kind of based on what Carlina does? Or are you sticking to your six first lifts and kind of see where you end up on deads?
You want me to go through, or do you want to talk about it?
Yeah, let's see if you guys had the same plan.
Yeah. the idea was to get in as good of a squat as we could. For squats in particular, we were kind of every step of the way wondering what Carlina would do. Both Eric and I thought that she would go for the world record on her second and then a bigger jump on the third, which is what ended up happening. So our plan was to set me up to be able to take, have the option to take 224 on the third, which I think I probably had it in me on the day, but I'm also glad that we didn't go for it because I ended up having to hold my squat to lock my knees for 12 seconds, 12 full seconds. So that definitely made 220 a lot harder than it had to be. And then the strategy for bench, honestly, I had so much upper body issues, like tendon issues, that I was actually failing 95 kilos in the gym the week before Sheffield.
That's what you told me at the lobby. That is concerning.
So I was really thrilled that the taper ended up working out. And every time I get on a comp bench, it always feels a lot better. And I got some advice from my physio, Adrian, to help with the tendon issues, and it ended up being okay. But that, to me, felt like the biggest Hail Mary. So the plan for bench was just to get whatever I could on the day. And then the plan for deadlift was to get the world record. Obviously, we know how that worked out. I didn't quite get it, but I'm not unhappy with it on the day, but that was the plan. And then Eric can explain how we were watching what Carolina's attempts would be. Because I don't know how much we were fighting her for placing, considering that her bench is so much better than mine, and considering that I had the tendon issues I did. But we were definitely watching the squat and the deadlift, the attempts she was going to take. Maybe I'll let Eric explain that one.
Well, one question before we get to Eric, did you find out what the 12 second holdup was, what they didn't like, or was it just a personal you, or what's going on? Why did they make you hold 12 seconds for your squat?
Her knees weren't locked up.
Yes.
Yeah. It wasn't, you couldn't really tell that from the front. So when I watched the stream again, I was like, yeah, I can see why the crowd was like, what the hell? Give her the squat. But from the side, I could actually see it. It wasn't egregious by any means. I think as referees, you're comparing something to a reference sometimes. And she was definitely less locked out than she was in her second and first. I mean, and fair enough, right? 220 is a heavy ass weight for anybody, but it's also the first time Jess ever walked out on the platform. So yeah, and I was, again, to give you the sense of the scale of the crowd and the noise out there, I saw it pretty quick and I was like, lock your knees, and I don't think anybody heard me. I barely heard it in my own head, and then I had to like shift down to the coach's box to try to get an angle so she could see me, and then I was like, lock your knees. And Jess, I think you said you heard somebody yell it. I don't know if it was me, but then she corrected and got the squat.
It's the it's like stimulation overload, though. Like when you're out there, everybody hooting and hollering at you like that, and your adrenaline's going, and you just hear in 2,000, like they are yelling, 2,000 people, and you have one voice like, lock your knees amongst 2,000. It's difficult. And you're also like, why the hell am I still standing here without getting the squat command?
Kind of thought that's what it was, and I saw the head ref. The head ref was just literally shifting side to side, trying to see the side judges. So I assumed that I was supposed to lock my knees. So I shifted back a little bit, and that didn't do anything. So I waited until she was looking at me, and then I just took a breath and straightened my neck, and then I got the command. And I did hear someone, probably Eric, maybe one of the side judges, yell, lock your knees. So I tried my best, but it's really hard to tell sometimes. I feel like I squat pretty much the same every time, but maybe I was a little more folded over with the 220.
A lot of it, like a trick, is trying to flex your quad so it looks more locked when you flex the quad. Sometimes that's the cue where it's like, just flex your quads and keep everything else. But that's easier said than done when you got a world record on your back, or what was a world record like 6 months earlier, right? It was so yeah, easy said than done. In terms of the bench, so you guys were kind of coming in here relatively dicey dicey. I mean, you started off with 97.5. Were you guys confident, or was it kind of like, look, we can't possibly start any lower than that, or else we're going to be so far back?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was gonna say, yeah, that's basically it. It was basically I'll start at 97.5 and then take as small of jumps as we had to. I was not sure of anything over that, to be quite honest. It was feeling better in warm up, but even still.
How are you
Yeah,
doing?
she took 95 as her last warm up, which is not textbook, if you're going to open at 97. But I think that gave me the confidence to know, like, worst case, we could go 2.5, 2.5, and she'd have a good shot at getting it. And then once I actually saw, oh, and also we were on the adrenaline and we were on ibuprofen, so
Oh,
there was some
yeah.
benefits there. So not natty. We're just exposed, Jess, for
Half
taking,
natty.
yeah,
Taking
all
Motrin.
taking the Motrin, the big M.
Taking the Motrin.
Yeah, but I was probably a little more confident than Jess that she was going to be fine, because I knew with the taper, I knew with the adrenaline, and I knew with the painkiller, like, she'd probably be good to go on the platform, and the pain inhibition probably wouldn't be there. But it was great to see her opener fly. And yeah, so bench was the plan was just to try to go 6 for 6 and get what was there. Kind of to add some color to and some nuance and kind of where my head was at with what Jess was doing on game day. I had run a lot of permutations and combinations of different totals, and done a lot of homework and thought upon how things are probably going to shake out. And I thought, best case scenario, if Jess went 9 for 9 and, was good to go and snab the squat world record and snab the snabbed a word. What am I saying? I
I
know
don't know
it's
what you're
Texas.
saying. You're scaring me.
Snabbed. We snabbed it. Yeah. So
It's some
grabbed.
New Zealand slang.
I don't know what's happening.
We snapped it.
If she grabbed squat and deadlift world record and went 9 for 9, and everyone else had a slightly less than ideal performance, she could have been as high as 7th or 8th. But I didn't think that was the most likely outcome. So one of the things that we talked about a couple times was, where do we want to be at on our second, where we make sure that we're not extending too far, but we're in a decent enough position to be able to take 224 if it's there, or to take that 220. And we kind of bounced around a little bit. We were talking about 217, and I was reasonably adamant, which is not that adamant, because honestly, I'm not the lifter. Like, I really think it should be 215. I think that's the number, because then we can make a 10 kilo jump and as much of a nut as 9. And if we're just not having a great day, we'll still get 215. And yeah, the call to go 220 was, there was definitely, I was thinking about 224, but I wasn't sure. And I knew that the cost of not getting 224 and being stuck with 215 was not worth the potential benefit of getting, say, 224 versus 220. When I had ran the numbers, I thought it would likely not be able to push her up a placing. And if we got stuck with 215, it did have the potential of pushing her out of the top 10, which is outside of the money, which I know wasn't Jess's primary concern, but I wanted to, make sure that I put her in the best position to win. So that was something we talked about. And yeah, I didn't know that Carlina was gonna miss 232. We were both right, and I was very, very sure that they were gonna break that world record on their second. And we would have a shot at potentially getting and keeping the world record if they made an error on their third. But hindsight's A, 2020. You can't do attempt changes on squat. And B, I'm not 100% confident, like Jess said, that 224 would have gone with the, 12 second static hold at the top. And I was just glad they didn't ask her to re-rack, because if anyone's ever racked and unracked and then had to get a second squat, man, I think that would have been even more challenging.
Oh, especially with
So,
224.
yes.
That'd be brutal. This is always the case. The lifter's always like, I had five more in me. And the coach is always like, no, You know, it's always the case. This is, it's never the opposite anyways, or very rarely anyways. But you could kind of see on this day, I mean, obviously everyone's going to rewrite it in their minds, but Carlino's a little bit vulnerable, left behind all of her third attempts. And now when you look back, you're like, oh my gosh, like you said, we didn't know she's going to start missing all these. But now when you look back, oh, darn it. What if we just got more risky? 2020 hindsight. This is 2020 hindsight. And you also had 12 seconds involved on there. But you also would have needed that third deadlift. And if you grinded out your squat or missed, to your point, Eric, the drawback isn't only you move forward with 215. The drawback is the likelihood of missing your third deadlift goes way up. And your whole, that was money, first off, right off the bat. And would have been a huge joke. Like, that's your big bread and butter is that final deadlift. So, and it's the advantage in the battle of the 76s anyways. How much of this for you, Jess, was looking at other 76s, and how much of it was overall placing? Or were they one in the same? Because you had a good feeling. Obviously, it ended up Carlina, you, Chandler, then Agata. But were you thinking about via division, this is a battle of 76s, or were you like, honestly, that was out of my mind and I was more just looking at it as a whole, like I'm going against every single woman in every single weight class and let me see how good I could do as a whole like that?
I was looking at it purely on world records. That's what I was looking at, because not purely on world records, I guess, because for me it was that and a battle of the 76s, because Carlina raised the world record so much at Commonwealths, I knew that she was going to make it hard, not only for myself and Agata, but also for herself, because that was a huge total. And I had a feeling it was going to cause issues with the placing. It would mean that all of us would need to make every single attempt. And even if we did, to get a percentage above that, like when you look at the other competitors who are already going in with a higher percentage of the world record, and their likelihood, and just seeing their training and their likelihood and knowing kind of the numbers they would hit, even if Carlina had a really great day, it would have still been difficult for her, for example, to place in that top three. So looking at that, I kind of knew that we were going to be fighting for our lives for that middle of the pack range, to the lower end as well. And especially because I knew my bench, I didn't think my bench would be very good at all. I knew I would be fighting for those last few places, which didn't really matter to me as much as those individual records. And just having, setting ourselves up for a good day. Trying not to burn out too much on squats so I could set myself up for a good deadlift. And that was more where my head was at. And I think that's pretty reasonable too. It's easy to look at it and think, it's easy to just say, I'm here for the money, I'm going to win this. But when you actually look at the numbers,
right?
And you kind of have a feeling of what the other lifters are going to be able to do, you gotta be realistic, I think.
It was the perfect setup in a lot of ways for Carlina to win that wild card, that Commonwealth was in her backyard, yeah, in New Zealand. But for you sure. Also knew, so she did what she had to do. And it's amazing she hit 600, mm-hmm, as the first 76 kilo lifter to hit 600 kilos. And people are like, oh, she shouldn't have hit it like that high. The thing is, because she was the first to hit 600 kilos is why she got the wild card. So people are like, yeah, for Carlita, she's probably like, look at, I wasn't even invited to the party unless I did something crazy. Cause everybody and their mother was talking about Agata and Jess at Worlds. Like, you guys lit Worlds on fire and were by far, like, you guys stole the show. You and the 93s were in the same session. That was the best world session I've ever commentated on in my life. Carlene is like, if I don't raise a huge flag and really force everybody's hand to be like, well, you have to get Carlina. So the milestone 600 in the first 600 is 76. Okay. Now she's invited. Now it's like, okay, but I did that literally in my backyard like not literally my backyard, actually figuratively in my backyard. But in New Zealand, now I got to go to the other side of the world, and it is a crazy, it's crazy circumstances. So she, it'll be tough to your point, tough even for her, tough for all you guys. So it, yeah, breaking the record and moving up placings is going to be tough. It kind of was relegated to a bit of a battle of the 76s. But Agata, of course, was hurt. You weren't 100%. And Carlina, did you guys talk to Carlina? Was she 100%? Do you know?
She had said she was feeling good, but I don't know if that was just before the meet.
Oh, true.
Kind of thing, you know? Because you never,
she's not going to be like, I'm not at my best.
Admit weakness. That was like Taylor Atwood, actually. He had food poisoning the day before, and I saw him the day before the competition, and he was trying to tell everyone that he felt good. Yeah. Just, I think, for the mental aspect of not admitting weakness, but right. He kind of looked like shit.
You're looking up like, you go, you're like, Taylor, you still have barf on your sweater.
Yeah, like he did not look 100%. Yeah, so it's those kind of things. I don't know if she was 100% or not, but I knew she was gonna, like, her training went so well and she is so strong. I knew she was gonna be able to lift some huge numbers. But also, being an having been to so many world championships, I do know the feeling of that extremely high pressure atmosphere and how that changes things. And it is extremely hard to repeat the best performance ever two times in a row, let alone try to do something to win the whole competition. So I knew for us it would be a battle for placing between our category. That being said, the 232 that she did moved, like, she squatted it. So if she would have gotten that and then the deadlift, I think that would have put her placing quite a bit higher.
I mean, the deadlift alone is 7.5 kilos. That would have, she ended with 593.5. So
yeah,
she got that deadlift. She, it, like 9 kilos on the squat. I mean, if she, you know, I mean, you know, she's telling herself the same thing. Yeah, no kidding. If I would have got this, if I would have got that.
If I would have got that.
Right. It is what it is. But it's difficult to say. Like, was your guy's impression? Mm-hmm. And Eric, maybe what was your impression on best case scenario, what Jess would get in terms of total? Obviously, you had to adjust because you knew Jess wasn't coming in at 100%, and moving forward because Jess has hit 585. And to say a year later, it's not crazy to say, okay, 585, a year later, could she put 15 kilos on her total? Maybe. I mean, it's not like, it's not the craziest thing in the world to say that. And, but on the flip side, things got to go your way, healthy, et cetera.
Yeah. I was definitely looking at the best case for Jess, the best case for Carlina and everything else, and just figuring out where that would be. And I thought, trying to chase Carlina was potentially a mistake. And we agreed, like Jess was saying, we were there for world records. The impression I got from Carlina's game plan was they were trying to get every last kilo possible and place in like the top five or top three. Mm. And I think that is fine because they were able to break the squat world record on the second. And they were really that's the position they were in. So I don't think they made any errors. I think Carlina probably could have put together a higher total than she was left with because they were pushing to get everything they could out of them. But what was the loss? You know, there wasn't much because she did get the squat world record, and that's a huge payout, you know. So like Jess said, with the 232, she stood up with it. You know, so she was pretty damn strong on the day. It might have been just a little bit too much to where a depth got cut or something. I don't quite remember the cards that the refs threw on that. I think it was depth. The 257, that's a 2.5 kilo PB, right? The squat would have been a 2 kilo PB. The bench would have been a 1 kilo PB. So they went in trying to get an all three discipline PB to try to launch themselves up and place in the top five. And fair call, especially since they secured the squat on the second. So I think it was an aggressive but very reasonable play on their part. And worst case, they could have taken a a couple kilos off here and there, going, I don't know, 229 on the squat, 122 on the bench, and 255 on their last deadlift, and maybe moved up a placing or two. I didn't run the math, but the gain in those lower placings is hundreds of euros, not or pounds, not thousands, right?
Right.
So from the perspective of looking at Carlina, the main reason I was watching her was not about placing, but to see, is she going to try to get that deadlift world record too? Because that was a small potential threat. I didn't think she had it in her. No offense. I mean, I just, because 255 at Commonwealth's was very hard, and I hadn't seen anything in training. Of course, people share what they want on Instagram that indicated there had been a, a leap in deadlift performance. So I wasn't afraid of it. But then I saw that we didn't get lot number advantage. So we were now in a position with the deadlift where I'm like, all right, I want Jess to be pulling after Carlina. And Dom, if you're listening, I saw you hovering around the attempt change person. He was a hovering, and I told the attempt change guy, because it was a unique scenario where he had to take a picture of it and then radio it up to the desk because we were two flights down.
Really? That's how they did it?
Yep. That way it wouldn't be late, because it took earlier I was joking about how I got in trouble for not hitting Jess hard enough, and then also for telling her not to take the flights of stairs, and she was ready to beat me to death. There was three ways to get up there. There's two different elevators, and there were stairs. And Jess, like, look, I'll just take the stairs. And I was like, Jess, I'm strongly against you going up three flights of stairs before you take a squat or a deadlift. And she was like, I'm a fucking athlete, Eric. I can do this. And I said, please don't hit me. But I still feel the same way. And she hit me anyway. And then I didn't hit her hard in the back. So it was an emasculating day for me. But ultimately, I'm glad we took the elevator.
She knew. She's like, I'm going to hit you because I know if you hit me back, you ain't got much steam on that.
Please. Yeah, you proved to me that you're not a threat.
Yeah, exactly.
I can dominate you physically. Yep. So, but yeah, I actually like timed how long it took me to go up the stairs, how long it took me to take each elevator, and my final argument in my favor, which won Jess over, was that there's only like a 15-second difference in one in the faster elevator and the stairs. So it wasn't the juice wasn't worth the squeeze, if you will. So anyway, they had 240 in for their opener. We had 242, which was fine. But Carlina had Dom had changed her opener on at least squat. I don't remember on bench. We weren't really paying attention on bench. So I wouldn't have been surprised if he changed and he was hovering. And then last minute he went, you know what? I'm good. I'm not going to change it. But I had told the attempt change marshal, like, look, I'm going to wait till the very last second. So if Dom puts a change in, I want to put a change in as well. Like, I want you to know, no matter what he does, we're going to go 2.5 heavier. Unless it was too high. Like Jess and I had agreed, we're not going to open heavier than 245. That's just too much for where she was going to go.
Yeah.
So the big threat and the thing I was thinking is Carlina kind of going to try to get 262? Because then obviously we got to go 262 and a half, and we need to be in a position where I can actually see what she can pull, gauge what she has left. It didn't become an issue. Dom didn't change the attempt. And ultimately they didn't go for it. Their third was 257. And based upon their second, I was as confident as one can be that I did not think she had 262 or even that close to it, which apparently I was right based on 257. So I was like, look, Jess, and I had Garrett Bentley, big shout out on WhatsApp in my pocket. I was like, listen, I think it's close for Jess. We didn't say this to Jess, but like in the group chat between Jess, myself, and Garrett, she did her opener and we were both like, solid, great job. That was perfect. And then in the private chat I had with Garrett, he was like, slow.
Imagine you fucked up the group chats and Jess is like,
yeah, I'm just reading this.
I guarantee you, both Garrett and myself double check that.
Okay.
You do not say slow to an athlete after they open.
On the opener?
I mean, that might have pushed me more, to be honest. Maybe not on the opener. Maybe on the second one.
that's like a shot in the gut.
Not the opener. You know? The opener is like, okay, well, this is all downhill from here.
But, yeah. Kind
of. So to my eye, 242 did move a little slow. And I was like, but not so slow that Garrett and I were like, look, it's not going to happen. We were like, okay, it's going to be very close to her limit if she can pull 262. 252 and a half moved better. It didn't actually go as slow as I thought it would. So, Jess was like rising to meet the challenge is what it seemed like to me. And I was like, okay, we might have this. But then when I saw Carlina's second pull, I was like, normally I would say like, hey, whether it's 262 or 262 and a half, what's the difference? But I was like, this might matter. And I was like, Garrett, Jess, I think we just put
Half a
262
kilo.
in. Like, I don't want her to pull anything more than she has to because it might not be there. And I simply do not think Carlina would have it. If you ask me, hey, how much money would you bet that Carlina cannot pull 262 right now? I would have said, like, a lot of money. I was very confident, and I'm like, I don't want to go head to head and get stuck with a higher number here. So let's just go 262, and I was ready to do an attempt change, but it didn't need to happen. And you know, Jess left it all on the platform. So,
Jess, how were you feeling for Dents? How did the opener feel for you?
Bad. Like, I will admit, back was feeling a little tight during warm-ups, but it was feeling, it's almost hard to tell until you start getting in those really heavy ranges how it's gonna go. For me, there's two things that there's two things that I were that I could have corrected going into my last deadlift, and I actually even felt on my second. One was that my blood glucose levels, I could feel they were dropping, and I was inhaling Gatorade powder and maple syrup in the back room just to try to bring that up, but it didn't quite work in time. So that, what that does, just makes me feel really shaky and dizzy. And then the other thing that I did that I'm kicking myself for a lot is when I went for my setup on my third deadlift, I stood just a little bit too close to the bar. And that, not my blood sugar, but standing a little bit too close to the bar is actually my single biggest regret of that entire meet, to be honest with you. Because I think it was a toss-up. Like, that would have been my limit for the day, but I still think I had the strength in me. I just, that little thing can make that much of a difference. But at the same time, it's almost hard to say, because when my blood sugar gets low like that, it does make it really easy to pass out like I did. So it's kind of hard to say if that would have went any better if I'd set up just a little bit further away or not. I think it was mostly just my blood glucose levels dropping, because it's a really hard thing to fight through when it causes you to lose consciousness a bit easier, especially in powerlifting.
We've seen that.
Yeah, that actually happened at my third squat in the first Worlds after COVID in Sweden, where I had the squat almost up, and then because I had that blood glucose drop a little bit, I felt really dizzy and I ended up taking a step forward.
I remember that. And it was kind of,
yeah,
it was weird because watching it, you could tell you blacked out for a second, which is kind of scary when you got that kind of weight on your back. Just a second, but it's enough that you come to when it's like, you're already moving forward. It's like, holy smokes, Jess, you are right. You become a world champion, all's well that ends well. But that's the dicey thing that people don't realize when we're talking about you dealing with diabetes and competing at the same time. And to the point of the foot setup, it's the biggest deadlift. It's the world record. And yeah, foot placing probably makes a big difference.
Mm-hmm.
People will be like, how big of a difference? Just bring your feet in on your squat, just half an inch, and let me know if you notice the difference. You'll notice the difference. You know what I mean? People are like, oh, come on. No, not come on. Change your footing on your top end squat. Let me know how it feels. You're gonna notice it's different. It's same with your hands on the bench or whatever. You got to hit these things. Why do you think that was? Why do you think your feet were just a little excited? Because sometimes we've all done it. If you do it enough times, hopefully it's not your third lift, but you'll chase bad money where you had a bad setup and you're like, damn it, I knew that was a bad setup. But you don't always pay the price because the weight wasn't top end. But if you try that.
Yeah, I think that, I think maybe I even set up that way for my second, and it just wasn't quite heavy enough for it to make that difference. So it's hard to say that way, but yeah, the blood glucose thing was kind of big for me. And it's frustrating too, because it's, although I've done a lot of competitions, sometimes my diabetes is pretty unpredictable. And it was just one of those times where I would consider it a factor that's only semi somewhat semi in my control. So sometimes you do everything you can and it doesn't quite even out, but that's just the way it goes. And I'm happy with how long I was able, or how I tried to push through it. And it felt like I still had the strength. It's one of those frustrating things where every factor didn't quite click. You know, when you're just so close to something.
Well, put it this way. Compare this to, because we didn't talk about it like on the podcast. Compare this to 2022 Worlds, when you were, and I've talked about it on the podcast, I've told this story. When I was in the commentating booth and it came down to the last deadlift and you were defending your world title in the best battle we've had at the entire championship. And I'm looking over there and in the wings, I see you with your headphones in. And I'm, you know, when you're talking and you could hear yourself say, like, this is the biggest deadlift in IPF history. And Jessica Bittner is about to pull, not only for the biggest deadlift, but for the world title. It's all come down to, and I'm saying this, and I'm seeing you in the wings, and you're like, and you're like getting ready. And I see Garrett, I see Jeff, the Canadian coaching staff, and they're like, let's go, let's, they're hyping you. And I stood up, I had to stand up, and I'm like, I feel it. Like the crowd felt it. This was Worlds, and they were on their feet, and it all came down to that dramatic end. And when you walked out, you took out your earphones and you walked down on a platform, it was like, oh, Nelly. And you knew it was going to be a fight. And when that fight came, your knees were knocking, your eyebrows were dancing like they do sometimes when you deadlift. And you just had this feeling you were going to lock that out. Like, once you got past the knees, it's like, Jess isn't going to, she's not going to fail. That moment, as you're waiting in the wings, compared to Sheffield, is there even a comparison? Like, did you reach the same level of hype when you walked out there, or did it felt different?
It did feel different. Mostly because, I love that direct head-to-head competition. I do live for that. Like that, the battle at Worlds, I was, I think, 12 and a half kilos down going into my last deadlift. I 100% knew I could get it, and I felt like I was going to get it. At Sheffield, I knew the strength was there, but I didn't feel as hyped up in the same way, because I could feel that dizziness. It's a strange feeling describing what a blood glucose drop feels like, but it was cutting into my, I almost hate to admit it, but it was cutting into my focus, and it didn't allow, I feel like maybe it's hard to put a finger on it, but
like, did you know you weren't going to be 100%, and you're trying not to tell yourself that when you're about to go, but you're like, frig.
You know what? Yeah. I think so. I was trying to pull what Taylor did, where I was like, oh,
I was
yeah,
about
I
to say,
this.
You were Taylor Atwood with barf on your
didn't
sweater
want to
at
admit,
that moment.
Yeah. I did not want to admit weakness. I did not want to admit it. I would die. You have to kill me before I would admit that there's a chance I wasn't going to get it. But at the same time, sometimes you know when you're doing that to yourself, when you know you're not 100%. Yeah.
It's the worst. Everybody's
Can I say something for a second?
Yeah, jump in.
So this is going to be the prideful older brother comment. But so this is my first time handling Jess in person. You know, like, we have a monthly call where we chat on a Google Meet. And we collaborate together for programming, and you know, I do my best to help her. And I had never seen what she has to do as someone with diabetes on game day. And like she was saying, she doesn't want to admit that it was impacting her. And I'd never seen it before. But just as an onlooker, I thought, this is a badass athlete. You know, she's so resilient. Ryan, you've talked about the hero cut she's had to do. you know, I came in and we moved up a weight class and I tried to make those cuts far more sustainable and less painful, but it didn't matter back in the day. She could do a hero cut and crush it on game day after flying to Africa or Sweden, or this time to the UK from Canada. She's incredibly resilient. We were talking off camera on how she's able to, you know, sleep and deal with sleep loss. You know, she works at Walmart as a pharmacist in the COVID era, and her training schedule is something that is, let's just say it requires a lot of flexibility, you know, for her to be able to get her things in. And sometimes she starts one workout on one day and then finishes it the next because it's bleeding into the AM. Like, there's been some, you know, decisions about should I sleep or should I deadlift, you know? And so I see Jess as an incredibly resilient and super strong athlete. And when I saw that she was having to prick her finger multiple times, check her CGM, check her blood glucose, manage it on top of everything else she was doing, I was like, God damn. Like,
You're like, is everything okay? Is this normal that you'd be checking that many times?
I asked that. I literally asked that. I was like, so was this a normal, you know, degree of having to monitor your blood glucose? And
Was
she was
it
like,
Jess? Really?
Yes,
Okay. I mean,
yeah,
you go ahead. You
absolutely.
go ahead.
Oh, yeah, it's a normal amount of monitoring. Like, I'm pretty much constantly checking my blood glucose. I also, or sorry, my, this is actually interstitial glucose levels with the, I scan it on my phone and it gives me a reading that can be anywhere from 5 to 15 minutes behind. So I also check my blood on my finger, which is more accurate. That's a factor I guess we could talk about is towards the end of the competition, I was noticing when I started to check my actual blood, I was noticing it was a lot lower than the reading I was getting from here. So it did make it a little harder to correct the drop I was having in deadlifts because I didn't realize that was happening until a little bit too late. That's kind of a weird niche thing that not a lot of people, I don't even know if a lot of people listening to this might relate to, but it's what just an extra thing that I have to think about. I've said this before that I'm not really, I've said this before that before anything on competition day, my diabetes is first. And in some cases, I think that helps me with the chaos of the meet because in my head, I'm just focused on, okay, I don't care about anything else. I'm focusing on my blood glucose levels, being okay for this competition. That's my first thing. I'm not worried about, if the platform's a little slippery, I'm not worried about anything like that. The first thing I have to focus on is making sure that I'm actually going to be okay to lift. And for this competition, it was absolutely no different. And what I have to do to ensure that is very extensive. And I've wanted for a long time to make some sort of video about that, to show all the extra things that have to that you have to do with type 1 diabetes and all the extra things you have to think about. But yeah, I'm basically checking my blood glucose levels constantly. I'm adjusting because with an adrenaline-based sport like powerlifting, you get blood glucose spikes and then sometimes you get drops as well when the adrenaline kind of wears off and it's pretty unpredictable. So the only thing you can do is check and adjust. Sometimes I'm going for small little jogs to help my my insulin work a little bit faster or to help drop my blood glucose quicker because that's the quickest way to drop it back in range. Because if it's too high, everything's going to feel a couple RPEs higher. And if it's too low, I run the risk of passing out. And it also makes the lift feel a lot more difficult. So those are two things that affect me a lot. And I think for the most part, I've done a really good job managing, but sometimes the just that little bit of extra unpredictability can the throw a wrench into things. And actually, I now that we're talking about it, having this meter read a little bit incorrectly was the smallest thing, but it was a big thing for me. Yeah.
Do you think like moving forward, you could take something from this, like, because we got to do another battle of the 76ers in Malta. What are the expectations from both of yous? Because now you've dealt with this, you know, on a good day, you feel like your deadlift is loaded up. We're going for the win, and almost anything is fathomable, especially on that one day in Malta when it appeared as though when you were in that wings, it was crazy. The feeling, you know, it's when you watch somebody about to come out to the bar, sometimes you get that feeling like she's going to do it. Kimberly Walford was somebody that in her prime time, Kimberly Walford, when she came out for the final pull, you just knew, waiting in the wings, watching her, and then she marched out, is like, yeah, she's going to do it again. And I remember in South Africa, when you were in the wings, I mean, I was still like, my heart was beating through my chest just because it was the biggest deadlift, not just of that weight class, but of all time. But I had that feeling and I was like, I don't know. Maybe it's just me being that, you know, I got this hopeless romantic view when it comes to like the Canadian lifters, and like I knew everything was on the line, but I was like, I think this is going to happen. And then once you started pulling and you broke the ground, it just looked like it. Going into Malta, everything's back on track. And let's say it's that Jessica Bittner that shows up. What are we looking at here? Are we looking to, what's the battle plan here? How far can we push this young lady, Eric, and Jess? How far? Because I know you probably think you got a lot in you, just like all lifters. Like, man, I had more kilos to go. What do you think, Jess? Let me hear from you first, and then we'll get Eric, and he'll have his sober second opinion, maybe.
What do I think? I'm very excited for this training block, actually, because I think I mentioned this before, but leading into like around January and in the winter actually too, my training wasn't the greatest because I lost about 11 pounds of body weight from the stomach flu, and it did not go back up after. So it was a drop all at once. Took a lot of bench strength away, a lot of squat strength. Not too bad actually. My deadlift was thankfully okay, but it took a long time to build squats back up and an even longer time to get bench feeling okay. And then it just led to a bunch of tendon issues, and that got in the way a little bit. So I'm really excited to just keep building my squat because it's actually been feeling really good in these past, especially 6 weeks before Sheffield. It didn't start to feel good until then. And now I feel like I'm finally back up at the spot I was even last year before Worlds. I feel like I'm at a good building point from there. And then bench and deadlifts too. I'm finally at that point where I feel like I have more room to grow and more space to build on that in a way. I don't even know how to explain it, but I feel like if I can stay healthy and stay on the upswing, I am very, very excited for Malta.
Let me ask you one question. Over under 600.
Over under 600.
Or on the money, 600.
Or on the money, 600. I think that's completely dependent on if I don't wreck myself benching again, to be honest with you.
Do you think, put it this way.
I think right on the dot.
Do you think you'll even need 600 though? And because like, look, maybe Carlina hit 600, but maybe she doesn't. She's going to be phenomenal. She's going to be 590 and up most likely, but there's a possibility 600 doesn't happen in head-to-head showdowns with travel and everything as well, right?
I think.
You think so?
Get out of here, Ryan. We need 600. That is the minimum we're talking about at this point. I hope Carlina hears this right now. Ryan, you're being a hater.
I mean, for everybody, though, like, sometimes you never know. You never know. Sometimes we have these big, I do, like, after years of doing these preview shows, I am always like, you never know, like this podium is going to be, and I give a round big number for that class. And then sometimes it lives up, sometimes it doesn't. Eric, what are your thoughts on it?
I have good thoughts.
Okay.
I have confident thoughts.
Okay.
So, Jess and I are coming up on working together for 3 years. And when we first started, this is kind of funny. Jess was like, oh, I want to do some bodybuilding, powerlifting. I'm struggling with it during COVID. Omar said, this guy's good at, doing bicep curls. So I'll work with him. And then initially, when she's starting to move back to powerlifting, she was like, yeah, I'm going to write this program. And why don't you take a look at it if you have any thoughts? And then I think over time we've negotiated towards being more collaborative. And now I've learned a lot. So some of the first things that I was doing with her programming and when we were talking about it was I was cutting back volume that I didn't think was potentially needed for her to progress, especially as she was coming off a bit of burnout. She had like a few back strains, like no major injuries or anything like that. But her staying healthy was something that she mentioned, and that's also something I think is a huge priority. But the interesting thing I saw is she can handle a ton of volume. So we've actually pulled her back, even though we've seen her total climb as she's moving to the 76s. She won worlds at 585. She's done that doing far less work than she's done previously. And this block is probably the first time that I've thought, you know what? Let's actually start pushing you back to those areas where it's going to be a challenge. And I know there's going to be dividends to pay there because she hit an equal PB bench coming off of a bad cycle. She hit a PB squat. And I tell you what, if you stay conscious on a deadlift, it makes it a lot easier to hit a PB.
That's
So
a fact.
as much as Jess was kicking herself for not keeping her position, I think she needs to give herself a little more grace. That's my perspective, because I believe consciousness is required to complete lifts in most cases.
That's
So I think
coaching right there.
that's, you know, that's, I am a sports science researcher, so that's, you could say that might be science, but I think Jess is stronger than she was previously, doing less work than she is doing previously, and is going to be stronger and has a lot of time to prepare. We almost have a full 11 weeks till Malta, and I am very confident that we're going to see the strongest Jess on the platform. And if you ask me over under 600, my answer will be she's going to pull what she needs to win.
I like that answer. Well, I mean, you guys will be within striking distance, and you're not sure exactly where you're going to end up if this is going to be around the 600 kilo range. If you had to guess.
I think it will pro I think there's a good chance we'll be starting with a number that is not five.
600 is the goal. There is no other
Damn.
goal.
I mean, that would
Well,
be
we're
abs.
gonna do what's needed to win. It's worlds, There's so I mean if it's not like we're gonna put additional kilos on the bar for that last deadlift to hit 600 if Carlina is having a rough day and she's at 592 or something like that. So
For
yeah.
sure.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to be an amazing battle and a great showdown, and let's see what, and hopefully Agatha's back to 100%. The struggle she had with the bench press, hopefully she can work that out. I was talking to her afterwards. It's been Other people have sorted it, lost a little bit, but not huge chunks. But Agatha really needs that bench press to come back up around the 160 range, because that's a lot of kilos off the total if she doesn't. So we'll
That's her
see.
weapon.
That's her biggest weapon. You guys all have your weapons.
Can I brag on Jess just a little bit more?
Okay,
Can I have
sir.
another prideful older brother moment?
Okay, sir.
I mentioned this, just because I think she is so much more of a powerful athlete because of what she has to deal with, that it makes her much more consistent and on point with certain details that other athletes might not have that same kind of focus on. I was reflecting, Jess, like you were going through your cutting process, and I kept asking, like, did you need to talk about the cut in the last 4 or 5 days? You didn't. You knew exactly what you were doing. There are some athletes I've worked with for years. Every single time they do a competition, we have a sit down and we go over the cut, the same cut that we've been doing for years. The same water cutting strategy, the same trade for carbs to fats, the same water loading, and the same, fasting period and the same rehydration process. Jess and I went over that one time for the first time she cut with me. She's never asked me about it again. She just does her job, makes weight. And that is like, that seems like normal. Okay, I taught you how to do this. You did it. But it's absolutely not. I've worked with dozens of powerlifters, and every time, even if it's just like the emotional security, like, okay, I'm 5 kilos over and I'm 2 weeks out and I want
That's
to feel
probably me,
coach.
Dude, I like, feel like you're taking shots at me. This is me you're describing.
Bro, you're like 99% of powerlifters.
Right. Yeah. Okay. That's fair.
So Jess is the outlier, and she has the autonomy, the competence, and she rises to the occasion, and it's just a privilege to be a part of it. So anyway, I'm done being effusive, but she's a gamer.
I remember going into 2021 Worlds. That was, I remember talking to Jess about like the weeks, because she had bulked up. And like we had a huge time off, so she's just, and then we were like, Jess covers her face, because you wanted to see, you had other goals, because we had so much time off in COVID, and you're like, I want to see how much jacked I could get, how muscular I could get, improve points with how heavy you could get while maintaining your physique, and you were like, whatever, we weren't in powerlifting mode yet, and then the Worlds comes around, and I remember talking to Jess and doing the math. Every week, this much body weight needs to be cut. And I remember being in group chats, and they were like, man, she's coming in at 76 or an 84. I'm like, 76? And how? But I seen online, she posted what her body weight was at. That's this many weeks with this many pounds per week. Like, that's aggressive. And it was like, Jess has done some hero cuts to make 72. We'll be all right. But it was, things get dicey. Like, your weight cutting abilities has become legendary. But hopefully nothing as crazy as the 72 kilo class.
Actually, it's become, I do a body weight cut as well. That actually in 2021, I didn't think Worlds were going to be on. So I wanted to try to weigh 200 pounds. And
that's
see
right.
How,
that's what your goal was.
I could feel at that weight. Yeah. So I got up to 196, and then,
holy shit.
We found out that Worlds were on maybe 3 months out, maybe not.
I think it was tighter.
Yeah, about
but
13. I feel like it was, about 12 weeks out.
Yeah, yeah.
So then all of a sudden I had to lose like 196 down to 167. So I had to lose 25 pounds of body weight. But actually, that I had Eric on my side this time, and that's kind of his absolute specialty. So it actually wasn't that hard of a cut. And honestly, once you gain that much weight, the bulk of it comes off fairly easily anyways, if you're doing it right, which with Eric's help was actually quite easy. I've done cuts before by myself, and I made them quite difficult on myself, which maybe has allowed me to have better results now that it's been easier and having such a qualified coach like Eric. But that was kind of crazy.
Yeah, it was.
When you're 196, you're like her. I think you dropped like 5 pounds in like the first week or something stupid like that. But it's your body's just ready to let go of it when you've been like pushing it to the heaviest you can get your body to go. But that was like, oh shit, time to get ready.
I was about to say,
yeah.
Be honest. When you checked in, you're like, all right, cool. We're about 12 weeks out. What's your body weight at? And she's like, well, I'm 196, and you were like, excuse me?
I'll be honest. I wasn't that worried because I knew how much she had cut and still performed well to get down to 72 and where she was there. So I was kind of like, it looks like a lot of weight to lose, but we only have to get so much true body mass off before then we're playing with water, which she has a track record of doing really well with. Even when she feels terrible and has the sauna, she's like on platform, she's all right, So I think it was definitely better the subsequent year, the second Worlds we were together, she didn't have to lose nearly as much weight. And I'm sure she didn't hate life quite as much. I know when Jess is having a rough time in the cut where she starts talking about being an 84 towards the end of it, like on the Friday, she's like, this isn't my weight class.
Never again.
I hate
never
this.
Again.
Yeah. And like just literally 48 hours earlier, she's like, yeah, I think I'm good in the 76s. That was just me talking for my last comp, and then we're back to going to 84s.
And then once she wins, she's like, "Yeah, it wasn't that bad." And you're like, "Wow, well, last few days you're a little cranky."
Talk to you on Friday, 11 weeks from now. Yeah.
Exactly. But I remember in the group chats, people were like, a couple group chats I'm in, and they're like, man, I don't know. I'm like, we could do this. I say we, like I'm fucking, I'm part of this somehow, but like, it can
You're
happen.
Canadian.
That's
You have
right.
pride in
That's
Team Canada.
right. That's what it is. Jess, how much time do we got? Do we got time for a couple names for the name game?
Yeah, sure. I got about 10 minutes. Is that good?
Okay, let's do 10-minute name game. All right, let me pull up my names. And if you got any names you want to toss out there too, Eric, you go right ahead. For the name game, Jess, literally can be I say a name and you could say the first word that comes to mind, a couple words, or you could do a story or whatever. You got 10 minutes, so maybe not full on story, but in the past, there's no right or wrong answer. It could literally be like Jesus Olivares, and you make world's strongest man. Whatever the hell. Okay. Or you could go into, oh, let me tell you something. When I saw Taylor, he had barf on his sweater. You know what I mean? Whatever. You say whatever you want. So first name, Kimberly Walford.
Absolute legend. Seven world championships. She was the one I originally was one of the people I saw lifting, and it made me think that is so cool. That is what I want to do.
Angelina Ilovakova, whom
Oh man.
do you remember?
Yes. Oh, do I
Of course.
remember her? Of course.
Yeah.
That's interesting now that Carlina's hit 600, because I know that was Angelina's number one goal, is she said
Oh,
she's going to hit 600 for
was
that
it?
Worlds. But then she got her, yeah, she said it on the, I'm pretty sure she said it on,
Oh, she's
I don't
saying on my
know,
podcast? Wait a
I
minute.
think so.
Yeah, this is going back a couple of years. Forgive me if I forget, but for anyone
Yeah,
listening, she was the
and
European champion, and you guys were kind of rivals, but you never ended up facing off again.
no, because she ended up hurting herself and going up a weight class. But that was her goal, to be the first to hit 600.
So you attach that. I mean, I guess, right? It's a
Yes,
shame that
my
things
head.
never really worked out, and obviously for anyone listening, she's in Russia, so due to the war, she won't be competing. Who knows, maybe she'll be a future rival. Can you imagine tossing her in the mix with you, Carlina, Agata? The 76ers would be bonkers. And then you got Laura from Matolin from France. 76ers is class is stacked. Okay, Agata Shitko.
Oh, the first thing I think of is there was a moment at Worlds where we knew she had an absolutely insane bench press. But on her opener, it moved so fast that the entire warm-up room took a step back and just gasped collectively.
Really?
Everyone's jaw hit the floor. That's a moment I think of when I hear Agata's name the most, actually. It was so crazy impressive.
Were you? I bet you the Canadian coach is like, all right, well, this is going to be a big
Yeah, we were looking at
deadlift.
each
You were
other
no
like that.
lies, no lies on that one. Carlina Tongatea.
The first thing I think of is watching Commonwealth and seeing her hit those huge lifts, the first 600, and knowing exactly how hard the 76 battle was and is going to be.
Leah Babwa.
I think Leah's my absolute favorite. Like she, and she's also actually now, does she still have the highest dots of all time after Sheffield?
I
Or
believe
not?
so. Eric, do you? I can check right now.
Amanda Lawrence's did jump up from her last total.
Yeah,
I can
Amanda's
look that
jumped up.
up.
Amanda hit an insane, she had an insane meet. Her best one ever. So maybe double check that for me.
I got you.
We could check dots and also good lift points. You know, it's weird that I hate that IPF and USAPL on two different ones, and like the rest of the world basically, besides IPF, which is worldwide as well, though. It's kind of annoying because we kind of have two different formulas to try to cross-reference.
So by dots, it's Leah. And then if
Highest
we
dots
go
of all time.
by.
Leah had all of them before Sheffield, every single formula.
If we go by good lift points, it made an error. That's not right. Come back to me.
Okay. Next name, Gavin Aiden.
Gavin Aiden. Man, I gotta say, I'm very impressed with how he did, and he is hella entertaining to watch.
I know, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think honestly, he has so much potential to, because him and Keiko are super close in their totals. I think honestly, if he continues to stick with it, he is going to he's definitely going to hit the 93 world record.
He's super duper close. And we just did a podcast and dropped. I mean, it's a long one. Maybe, but if you can list, everyone's talking about it. I don't want to give too many spoilers, but I've done like five podcasts with Gavin and we go into some places and he opens up and it's like, oh my gosh. Anyways, if it's 3.5 hours long though, but it's a good one. Did you get that number, Eric? Who's the
I
queen?
did. So it is still Leah
Wow.
by good lift
Wow.
points, by 0.09 good lift points
That's
it
a
is Leah
very
Babwa.
Leah's so and she like
Margin.
she's gonna come back obviously for Worlds. Let's see what she does. But yeah, on all accounts, it's still Leah Babwa. All right, here's another one. Jesus Olivares.
I said it before Sheffield, but he was my favorite to win it. And you want to know why? Because
What?
I watched him in South Africa. I watched him go, I think it was 6 for 9, but he still completed all the lifts. He was injured. We traveled across the world. I knew that his ceiling was so much higher than it showed that day. And then plus his training was going super well. And then he literally has the highest bra total of all time. Now, insane.
He bounced back nicely. It was technical errors and injury that plagued
Yeah.
him. And this was like an
Two things.
amazing comeback for him because the
Oh yeah.
technical errors were cleared up. He said he worked on it hard and like the injury's gone. How about this one, Matt Gary?
Matt Gary. He is the I like that joke that I think Eric said where he's the Doctor Strange sitting there in the audience contemplating all possible outcomes of
That was
how
my
he
joke. Don't give that to
all those
Eric. Come on,
Pretty
man.
sure it was me. I don't remember saying it, but now I feel like I did. So.
That's what I think of now. They're just intertwined in my head.
He is that dude when Sheffield rolls around. He's like, listen to me. For less, every single possible plausible outcome, I got it already settled. How about this one? A blast from the past, old sporting rival, Chloe Dublin.
Man, I wish, because I wish we would have been able to face off again. Because honestly, I believe she got a pretty bad back injury after about a year or so. Because she's an insanely talented athlete. She is a very, very, or she was an extremely talented track athlete. She was the first person to ever get a full ride scholarship for powerlifting. And we only faced off at Junior Worlds in Canada. And then after that injury and then the USAPL splitting off, there just has never been another chance. But she's one of the people with the one of the highest potentials that I've seen. And I don't know if she's she had a lot of obstacles in reaching that, and I think her ceiling is still really high, but yeah, that's someone that I wish we would have been able to compete against each other again.
She's back in the IPF, but she went the equip route, went to the World Games.
Yes.
I'm not sure what she's doing now. I'd have to check in, but I remember seeing a PA Nats and she was gonna last year's PA Nats, not this one. And she's gonna do the World Games and she did them. So who knows? She's young. Who the frick knows? I don't know if I can't remember. She went what weight class. I think she's 76, but like a smaller end 76, anyways. The weight class change might have hurt. I think she would be nice and snug to easily cut to 72. It is what it is. How about, I got one more. And then if Eric wants to toss a couple out, then Eric can toss a couple out. But how about this one? Eric Helms.
Eric Helms.
Weak hands.
He's got no hands. It's revealed on the pod. He's got no hands. I worry about him.
No.
Now I worry
honestly,
about him.
It's one of the coolest things to be coached by someone where, like, Eric and 3DMJ is one of the places that a lot of powerlifting programming as we know it today originated from, as well as things like the muscle and strength pyramids. Like, I remember learning about that stuff when I was still doing high school and university track and field. Like, they taught us that as it was newer info. And it's crazy that I've become high level enough in my sport to make these kind of connections and then be able to be coached by someone as knowledgeable and experienced as Eric in his field. And I just think that's amazing.
It's crazy that that kid, like the old you version, in the future, Eric Helms would be bragging about you as an athlete that he's coaching, because that's how high level you are and like the battles you've done and whatever. Isn't that crazy to think, like, in the future, this dude's going to be proud of you and be like, let me tell you about on dinner parties, let me tell you about this kid I'm working with. She's difficult to work with, but she's talented. All right, Eric, do you have any, Eric, or what do you think? Did I take them all from you?
Well, no, I'm just all like happy and sappy. But no, I do have one since, first off, thank you, Jess. That's very kind. And it's a privilege to be in your corner. I do have one since on every Friday before competitions, Jess, which is using 84 and didn't have to cut, Amanda Lawrence.
Oh, Amanda Lawrence. Man, Amanda, honestly, I don't think I know this. Amanda is the bar as far as 84s go. Like, if I was ever to move up a weight class, yeah, she is the bar. She is who everyone in that class especially is trying to catch up to. And I don't know if I'll ever be able to reach those kind of totals at that weight, but I'm sure as hell gonna try.
Oh, that was my next question. Was that such a good ending? Because I was about to say, would you give it a go? And you're like, we might find out. Do you have a timeline on that, or like obviously go through this world as a 76, or?
I still have time to decide for this world. It might be too quick of a turnaround though, so I wouldn't make sense for me to jump up in that time period, but hopefully within the next year or two, I'll be able to finally build into a weight class. Because I was never a 72. I was always slightly too heavy for it. It was always a fight to get in that class. And even when 76 came around, totally saved my life. But I'm now becoming the top of that class, and it's getting harder and harder to make significant strength gains when I'm restricting myself to stay in the class. So that's almost the last thing that's left to push the boundaries, is to finally allow myself to gain some weight. Changes the way I squat, because it goes way up as soon as I start gaining weight. Same with my bench, actually, too. Deadlift, you never know. It kind of tends to stay the same, but it's that the last frontier for me, I think, is just trying to train super hard and eat well and let my body do what it wants to and put on that kind of mass.
Even if you don't catch up to Amanda Lawrence numbers on her best day, you will be able to walk in there and be like, I'm going to find out what my highest possible potential is. And that's exciting. You know, you will smash PRs all in prep, and you're going to hit the platform. Like, it's cool for the first time you'll eat into a meat. That'll be crazy for you, Jess, to be like, no, I'm eating into this meat. Like, you're going to feel amazing. Whatever happens with Amanda, Amanda's going to do Amanda, but you will see your true top end potential. So that'd be exciting to see. There'd be some crazy weights flying around, that's for sure. And Amanda will have somebody else around that's like world class with like a resume like yours, which is nice too. But what do you think, Eric? What do you think about the 84?
I think Jess can show that she can carry that level of size, and I think she would get a lot stronger. And I think it'd be very interesting. And ultimately, I'm here to back her and whatever goal she has, and help her do that to the best of her capability and reach her potential. So she wants to go 84, I'm in. She wants to go 52, I'm in. I'm just kidding. We're cutting off some limbs. No, yeah, I think 84 is a logical conclusion for someone at her height, at her muscle mass, and who is, you know, cutting a non-negligible amount of weight to make 76s. You know, she's walking around 80, 81 a lot of the time. So,
well, listen, I appreciate both of you coming on the podcast. Let's let Jess, do you do coaching now?
I don't do coaching at the moment.
Okay, at the moment. Wow. Keywords right there.
I thought about it for a while, but I'm just too busy. I stay tuned.
That's fair. Eric, can you remind everybody how they can get a hold of you for coaching? Do you have spots for coaching or?
Well, you know, the beautiful thing is that 3DMJ is a collective. We're sometimes known more for our bodybuilding coaching, but Brian Miner, Brad Loomis, and Alberto Nunez are all very experienced powerlifting coaches. Like, for those who don't know, Alberto Nunez was doing Delaney Wallace's nutrition in this comp. And he's also very competent as a trainer. Brian Miner is a very, very competent coach. So if you were interested in working with 3D Muscle Journey, which kind of means you're working with all of us to some degree. We have regular meetings. It's my job. I'm like the director/chief science officer of 3DMJ. So it's my job to make sure all up to date, and we collectively solve problems when we can't get through things. Like, Jess comes up in our meetings, you know, whenever there's things to be had, and I get the collective wisdom of the crew. So if anyone does want to work with 3D Muscle Journey, that's where you want to go. That's the number 3, the letter D, and then musclejourney.com. I personally have like 5 clients that I work with at any given time, so my roster is full, but I can tell you that the rest of the coaches actually have more coaching experience than I, because they've had not 5, but like 40 people for the last 6 years, while I've been trying to manage an academic career, a science communication career, and a podcasting career. Can we call it that, Ryan? Do we have careers in podcasting?
I don't know, dog. Who are you trying to convince? I don't know. Sure.
Both of us.
Exactly. I'm in. Sure.
So yeah, so definitely check us out at 30MuscleJourney.com. It's always a pleasure to work with motivated athletes, and we love what we do.
Perfect. Listen, guys, thank you for coming on. We'll probably all talk in the DMs, and I'll see you guys in Malta. Everybody listening, please do subscribe, give us a shout out, and until next time, 6-pack lap it at 6 up, and we are out.